The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health. Today, we're going to be learning about PFAS chemicals and what they mean for our health and environment. Our guests are Dr. Charles Moon. He is a pediatric environmental health fellow in the Department of Environmental Medicine and Climate Science at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Dr. Moon also co-chairs the New York State American Academy of Pediatrics Committees on Environmental Health and Climate Change, as well as their Public Policy and Advocacy Committee. We also have Kate Donovan. She is Director of Northeast Environmental Health and Senior Attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council, where she works on a range of environmental and health issues. Kate is a graduate of Skidmore College. She also holds an MPA from Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs and a law degree from Pace University Law School. So Dr. Moon and Kate Donovan, welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio.
Thanks for having us, Vincent.
It's great to have you. So let's start with the fundamentals. Can you help our listeners understand what PFAS chemicals are and what they're used for?
Sure. So PFAS, or PFAS, as we've often referred to them, stands for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, which is certainly a mouthful, but it refers to a class of synthetic chemicals, and there's over tens of thousands of individual chemicals represented in this class. And they're widely used throughout our manufacturing and industrial processes for their oil and water repellency, their temperature resistance, and their friction reduction.
We just did a presentation for one of our local municipalities, Kate, where we did some research and found there were like 16,000 chemicals under the PFAS umbrella. They come in everything that we essentially use, from personal care products to nonstick cookware to clothing coatings and what have you. How, Kate, are people exposed, or Dr. Moon, you can chime in as well. How are people exposed to PFAS?
For me, answering the question about how people are exposed. The most common way that people are exposed to PFAS is through contaminated food or water. For infants, especially, there's other exposure pathways that include things like placental transfer while they're in the womb with the mother, as well as with breastfeeding. When we talk about contaminated food and water, often we see in communities, like you were mentioning, there are industrial facilities close by where when they are discharging materials from their facilities or for other reasons, PFAS gets into the communities, into the soil and the water. We've seen that happen in a few communities around New York State. And then when it comes to things like contaminated food, that can come from a variety of ways. There is often grease-resistant packaging in things like popcorn bags or fast food containers that contains PFAS. But also we know that PFAS is in a lot of different things. And when it breaks down, it gets into things like dust around our home. And if you're not practicing proper hand washing techniques before or after eating, right, that's another way that it can get into your food and get into your body.
And also through septic systems as well, right, seeping into groundwater. So Kate or Dr. Moon, given that, how can people protect themselves? What protections exist? And then what regulations are in place to help mitigate this?
Yeah, I might jump in here. So I think, as Dr. Moon said, there are all these different pathways that PFAS enter into our environment and into our bodies, some of them more direct than others. And it may, as you mentioned, they are everywhere and in quite a lot of things that we interact with every single day. So, you know, there are a couple, you know, there are a number of steps you can take to try to ensure you're protected and exposing yourself to as few of these chemicals as possible, although it may be virtually impossible to avoid them completely. The first tip I would have, or the first thing I would suggest for people, is get to know what's in your water. If you are serviced by a public water supply in New York, your municipality and public water supplier has been testing the water for PFAS, well, for POFA and POFS, which are two particular chemicals in the class of PFAS. They've been testing the water since 2020. And so that data is available on the Department of Health's website. So you can actually look up to see if there have been detections or exceedances of PFAS chemicals in your water. If there has been an exceedance in your water supply, you should have been notified already through the Department of Health. If you get your water through a private well, which many New Yorkers do, you would need to take other steps to either have your water tested, because those particular sources are not being monitored through the Department of Health at this point in time. I would say the second kind of the next range of protections or the next thing you might do to protect yourself from these chemicals is kind of be aware of these buzzwords or these key phrases that are used in products. Because as you mentioned, it really can be found in a lot of products that are found in our households. So personally, I avoid things that say waterproof, stain resistant, wrinkle free, nonstick, Scotch Guard, things that just say Scotch Guard on the label. Those are all indications that some type of chemical is being used to give that product that type, a specific type of quality or characteristic. And that would be a good place to start. And lastly, avoiding plastics is always a good place to start in terms of just reducing your exposure to PFAS, but other toxic chemicals.
And Kate, in the recent presentation we did with one of our local towns where they had PFAS water issue, one of the things that we recommended is that people get a relatively inexpensive carbon activated filter system, whether it's mounted on the countertop, no installation required, or under the counter. That's pretty effective in getting out PFAS and a lot of volatile organic compounds and so on. And you can read the specs when you go to purchase or go to Environmental Working Group at EWG.org, where they've done a lot of the research on that. Kate, how are companies being held accountable?
Yeah, I mean, so interesting. You know, PFAS was accidentally invented in the 1930s, right, by DuPont. And, you know, through this invention of this miracle chemical, right, it eventually found its way. First use was Teflon, PTFE. And that started being rolled out to consumers and in a mass way in the 1950s. And so we know that companies like DuPont and 3M and Chemours are the biggest, you know, those are the main producers of the actual chemicals. You know, there have been a number of lawsuits to hold those particular producers of the chemicals responsible over the years as more and more has been learned about the water contamination crises in all parts of the United States. I mean, in particular, Chemours is based out of North Carolina. So Cape Fear is a particular community that is terribly contaminated. Places in Minnesota where 3M existed. You know, these companies have been found in settlements, right, to pay out billions of dollars to drinking water suppliers across the country. You know, even in New York State, obviously, we're all aware of the Hoosick Falls situation that was many years ago. The responsible party for that contamination was Saint-Gobain, and they, you know, they settled with several million dollars being paid out to the community. But honestly, this is a real drop in the bucket in terms of the cost that it will cost to clean up the actual mess from PFAS.
So Dr. Moon, can you give us a brief synopsis of the health risks and health implications associated with PFAS? We have about 2 minutes left in this segment.
Yes, definitely. So just adding a little bit to what you and Kate were talking about earlier, there is almost every day a new study coming out with the health association to between PFAS and health outcomes. And, you know, there's around 16,000 different PFAS chemicals, where most of this research is only being done on a certain number of them. This is one of the challenges that we find when we're doing research on health outcomes with toxic chemicals, is it's just there's not enough money, there's not enough people to do associations on every single one of them. So what we've been able to find right now, the National Academy of the Sciences and the Federal Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry has reviewed the existing PFAS literature, found evidence that PFAS increases cholesterol levels and liver enzymes. It impacts the fetus and the mother, as I was saying before, during pregnancy, and it's been associated with lower birth weights and preeclampsia or hypertension during pregnancy. It's also been linked to low antibody responses to vaccines and is also a carcinogen and has been linked to different types of kidney and testicular cancer. But I wouldn't be surprised. You know, every year we start finding more and more of these associations.
And as I understand it, PFAS can be found in almost every ecosystem in the world. Even they found it on Mount Everest or in the deep ocean trenches. It's really pervasive. Certainly a threat and certainly an interesting topic for discussion. And we want to learn a lot more. But first, we're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and we'll be back after these words.
Westchester Medical Center Health Network's new Health Alliance Hospital is open in Kingston at 105 Mary's Avenue. The new hospital delivers on WMC Health's commitment to provide access to advanced healthcare right here in this community. Our comfortable and welcoming new Health Alliance Hospital has highly skilled doctors, nurses, and staff. We are ready to make your healthcare experience the best it can be. Here are just a few of the services ready to take care of you and your loved ones when you need us. A new emergency department with 24/7 triage for behavioral health needs, life-saving advanced cardiology programs, family birth center, private rooms, precise imaging technology, critical care support. And later this year, our inpatient psychiatry program will be reestablished to complement existing emergency and outpatient programs. Go to hahv.org for information. That's hahv.org.
Hey, Max, you look absolutely dashing in that purple tie. Ready to harness the world?
You bet, Daisy. I'm ready as I'll ever be. And might I say, your purple tie really pops with your vest.
Thanks. I almost went with a cape, but didn't want to come across as pretentious.
Nonsense. Anyone in our line of work should rock a cape.
You might be onto something, Max.
Phew, so here we go. First day on the job. We've got this, right?
Right. Don't forget, we both graduated from Dogs, Inc. with honors.
Which means I can guide my human around a busy city with ease.
And I can give my human a restful night.
I hope my human is kind and loving.
And I hope mine likes wet kisses and zoomies.
Ready to make a difference?
Born ready. Let's go!
Discover how extraordinary dogs like Daisy and Max change lives at no cost to the recipients. Visit dogsinc.org.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on the Hudson Valley's Talk and Sports Network, The Beacon.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Today, we're talking about PFAS chemicals and what they mean for our health and environment. Our guests are Dr. Charles Moon, who's a pediatric environmental health fellow in the Department of Environmental Medicine and Climate Science at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, and Kate Donovan, who's the director of Northeast Environmental Health and senior attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council. So, Kate, before the break, we were talking about, we learned about PFAS, an overview of PFAS, and we heard from Dr. Moon on the health risks and implications. But tell us about the advocacy and regulation that's going around on around this issue.
Yeah. So I can start very briefly at the federal level, just because that might be interesting for viewers. And I think we're obviously in a very new federal environment that is potentially and likely have an impact on some of the progress we've made at the federal level. So, you know, under the Biden administration, there were drinking water standards set, federal drinking water standards, which were set, which were the first time ever the federal government regulating PFAS in drinking water, which was a huge success. They regulated six particular PFAS chemicals, all at a more protective level than New York's current standards, which was great, right? Those standards still are, you know, there. There is a real risk, of course, in the next coming administration for those to be rolled back or weakened or face other, threats. So that is certainly a space to watch, and certain as advocates are concerned about how PFAS will be continued to be regulated under the federal and under the federal regime. However, in the state, we have a great opportunity to progress PFAS policy. And that's what the advocates in New York are really focused on doing and ensuring New York can continue to, you know, turn off the tap to PFAS, if you will, stop its use upstream in manufacturing and industrial settings, which we know is how it's entering into our water in the first place.
Given that the federal regulatory system is at risk, what exists in New York now in terms of law and regulation, and what potential legislation is there out there that listeners should be aware of?
Right. So it's important to note some of the steps New York has already taken to help address PFAS. As I mentioned before, New York did pass drinking water standards for POFA and POFS many years ago. And that's why the state is testing public drinking water supplies, and public water supplies are required to start filtering that out. So we have had some of the first water quality standards, right? New York has also banned the use of PFAS in firefighting foam, which we know is a source of contamination of many water bodies across New York State. That was a couple years ago. We've also started to kind of chip away at the non-essential uses of PFAS are in consumer products. We've banned the use of PFAS in paper-based food packaging. Dr. Moon was referencing fast food wrappers or popcorn bags. Technically in New York State, those products would no longer be allowed to use PFAS in that packaging. We had a law come into effect just in January, which would ban the use of PFAS in apparel. So Gore-Tex jackets and other types of school uniforms or other types of clothing material that had, you know, that would say stain resistant, right, can no longer use PFAS. So we have made a few strides in New York to address it, but there are so many more products out there that use PFAS that are completely unnecessary. So that's where the advocates are really focused this legislative session of, you know, getting PFAS out of more consumer products. And to give you a couple examples of what these products are that we find in our homes every single day that this legislation targets is dental floss, cookware, paint, beeswax, cleaning products, other textiles, things used on upholstery or rugs, you know, children's products, as well as, you know, cleaning wipes and other things like that. So there's a host of consumer products that personal care products, cosmetics, and menstrual products. So all of those products are being addressed by a package of bills this legislative session that we are advocating to get passed.
And consumers can also look at the Environmental Working Group's site, right, to find out and search by category of products to really make better choices. And so we talked about how it gets into our groundwater a little bit, and maybe some point source pollution with, you know, maybe factories or industrial facilities located along waterways. But are there other ways that it gets into our water?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually much broader than just industrial discharges. Not to mention it's coming out of industrial air stacks, right? So it's not just the water discharge, it's the air air admission that then deposits onto our soil and our water. Landfills and just a disposal of products and trash and waste is a huge issue. All of these products that I mentioned ultimately end up in your garbage can at some point in time and ultimately end up in landfills. Landfills are a very large source of PFAS contamination in the state. In particular, the leachate or the garbage juice, as some people call, when runoff from the landfills occurs, it will bring a kind of a concoction of toxic chemicals and contaminants into waterways that end up into our drinking water supply, as well as being concerned about sewage sludge and that's being spread on agricultural land. So a lot of PFAS actually ends up down our residential drains through cleaning products or paint or other products that we may wash down the drain. And that all of that gets sent to a wastewater utility, right? That kind of then manages that and is not necessarily taking out the PFAS from that that waste sludge or that waste stream that they have. And so one use for this kind of sludge, if you will, that comes from the wastewater treatment plant is to use it as a fertilizer, a soil amendment for land. And in theory, this type of biosolid, which it's often called, is great for fertilizing, not if it is completely contaminated with PFAS chemicals. So we know there are concerns about spreading that type of sludge onto lands that then get into our farm and other animal products coming from farms.
And apparently a lot of the older landfills, which are now capped, were not lined, right? So they do have a leachate that seeps out of the bottom of the landfill, and which then gets pumped out by the municipality or whomever, and then gets taken to a sewage treatment plant. But as you said, they're really not set up to get out complicated chemicals like PCBs or PFAS materials. So Kate, are there some best practices out there that other states are using that are really effective and that we might want to advocate for?
Yeah. So in speaking about turning off the tap is, you know, what I'll first address, because permitting facilities and landfills and ensuring what comes out is certainly a regulatory gap that needs to be addressed, a bit more complicated. But the reality is we need to stop using it and producing it for it to get there in the first place. And so advocating for laws that actually turn off the tap or ban the use of PFAS is really where we need to go. Now, I've mentioned New York is addressing a couple of these, you know, bills that address certain products, but states like Maine and Minnesota have actually implemented or passed more comprehensive non-essential use types of legislation that basically look across the economy or across all of their sectors to figure out where PFAS is needed and where it's not. And if it's not needed, then it's not allowed. And that kind of that process over a period of time will start to phase out the use of PFAS in not only manufacturing and products, but also industrial spaces as well. So ultimately, New York needs to go to a model where we're looking across of like all the PFAS uses and figuring out where we can move to safer alternatives.
And we're rapidly running out of time, and we always do on it with an interesting topic such as this. So Kate or Dr. Moon, where can listeners go to learn more about PFAS, to help become part of the advocacy team, so to speak, and really help mitigate this?
Yeah, so the best place to go is our group does have an Instagram called PFAS Free New York, PFASFREENY. So you can find us there. We've done a few community webinars. We have some advocacy days coming up as well. So if you'd like to get involved that way, we'd love to see you. I just wanted to connect everything that we were talking about back to health too. One thing I forgot to say is that once PFAS is in your body, there's no way to get it out. We don't have a treatment for it. So turning off the tap is really important. And I also wanted to say we've done this before, right? We've done this before with things like lead and with air pollution, where we've gotten them out of our societies and we've seen really amazing health and economic benefits. And we can do the same thing with PFAS.
And Kate, Natural Resources Defense Council has a website, I'm sure. And is that where a lot of this lives as well?
Yeah, NRDC has a lot of publications on PFAS generally, but in terms of our advocacy in New York, the PFAS Free NY Instagram site is a place where we're all advocating as New York advocates. Love to work with you.
Awesome. So thank you, Dr. Moon. Thank you, Kate. Really great work. We really appreciate the work that you and your colleagues do to keep all of us healthy and keep our environment clean for everyone, regardless of political affiliation or what have you. We all want to live healthier lives. So thank you. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.